Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
At 4:40 on Grant and Danny, Michael Phillips, Richmond Times-Dispatch, covers the Washington football team. A lot going on with them today. They've signed a brand new starting left tackle in Charles Leno, who was on the show an hour ago, and their schedule is slowly but surely trickling out. In fact, looks like their schedule's been completely leaked. You can check out where I retweeted it at Grant H. Paulson. Maybe five straight division games at the end of their slate, Dallas, Philly, and New York to end their 17-game gauntlet this year. We'll get to that coming up in just a bit. But right now it is time for our Beltway Blitz, our march through town covering the teams you care the most about. We got the Wiz coming up with Chris Miles, the Nats with Craig Heist, but let's start on the ice. Capitals wrapped up their regular season last night with a win. Now they get the playoffs underway Saturday night against the Bruins, who they beat yesterday. Nick Ashew of NBC Sports Washington will be working pre and post ahead of and after all those Caps playoff games. Nicholas, good to have you back on the show. Put a bow on the regular season. How'd you feel about what they were able to get done?
It was a roller coaster, honestly. I mean, we think of the beginning of the year where you think you have Henrik Lundqvist as your second goaltender, and then he's out for the year, and you go, well, I guess Vitek Vanacek is our guy, and then he plays really well, and then you have the COVID issues, and then injuries, and now more COVID issues with a couple of guys for the second stint for them. They've overcome a lot. That's like one of the biggest themes that we've talked about on the show of regular season is that every time an obstacle has been put in front of the Capitals, they seem to answer. And it's really a testament to Peter Laviolette, the culture that he's built there. And, you know, there's obviously a lot of veteran leadership. Everybody just feels like they're on the same page to where you have guys out of the lineup like an Alex Ovechkin. Daniel Sprong comes in and becomes a goal-scoring machine. You have, you know, Zdeno Chara come in last minute to beat us. Veteran voice of toughness that they needed, and then he finds a way to really help Nick Jensen find his next level and become a really consistent player for this team. There's just been so many different layers to this, and you know, one of the things I've always said about this year is that the teams that are going to be the best at overcoming adversity and being able to adapt to awkward situations put in front of them, given the year that you have and given what you know, they're going, everybody's going through in the league and in professional sports in general, the teams that can overcome that stuff the best are going to be the ones that are most successful in the postseason.
Nick, I'm Danny. You may not remember because you've been big time in us for so long, but I just wanted to ask you.
I knew that was going to happen. Listen, Danny, there are days where I don't even know what day of the week it is the last couple of months. All right, give me some credit. I love you both very much, and if you just keep inviting me, I will come on as much as I possibly can. Tell them to stop putting me in so many meetings. How about that?
I can't do that. I can also just ask
Nick,
you.
I've been standing on the table for you around here. Danny has been dragging you around.
That's right.
He's been crushing you.
That's right.
He got too big for us.
He's too handsome. He can't come on with us anymore.
You know,
Danny, your gel made you all crazy, getting in your ears.
That's what happened.
I thought we were closer than that. I'm really disappointed.
Well, I thought so too.
But
Yeah, I thought so too, Nick.
And I guess I have to prove myself, and I will prove myself more moving forward. I'm very sorry.
Oh, it's fine. He's so cute. All right, let's do this. Preview this series against the Bruins. Bruins are good, man. I have the nervousness. Yeah. I've got the fidgetiness. I don't know about Kuznetsov. I don't know what's going on. I'm annoyed. Tell me what's going to happen.
Well, first off, take out the last game completely out of the equation because the Bruins just put basically an entire no-name squad out there. I think they put out a total of 42 players in uniform this year. So they have had a lot of players in and out of their lineup, but they are good. They're really good, Danny. But so are the Capitals. I really think this is a seven-game series. This has the feel of a very evenly matched series between the two. That perfection line that Boston has is going to be a major problem for the Capitals. But you mentioned Kuzmi, and Ilya Samsonov gets thrown in there too. That's a big issue. Both of those guys and us not knowing when they can be back out there because this is COVID protocol 2.0 for them now. And center depth has been an issue for the Capitals for a while. Evgeny Kuznetsov is really important to that team. He's a massive underachiever. He's massively inconsistent. But when he plays well, as we saw back in 2018 in the playoffs, he's fantastic. He's as skilled as anybody on that roster. He's incredibly talented. Ilya Samsonov, when he was finally back in a rhythm, from the first time he actually was missing time because of COVID, he was a really good goaltender. Now a lot of this falls on Vitek Vanacek, and he's been great. He's been a professional. He's been really good. But you still have somebody with no experience in goal that's going to be out there. And when you don't know what's going to happen with Samsonov, you don't know what's going to happen with Kuzi, not to mention TJ Oshie. I don't think we'll see him at least the first couple of games out there. There are certainly issues out there for the Capitals, but the one thing, and I'll go back to what I said before, they've overcome every single obstacle, including guys being in and out of the lineup a lot for them this year, which gives me confidence against this Bruins team. But I'm telling you, it's going to be a really hard-fought series.
Nicholas, we love you. Welcome back and thank you.
Gentlemen, I miss you. I will see you soon.
It's been real. Let's talk a little hoops. Chris Miles, NBA TV. You see him locally, NBC properties, and hear him on The Fan. Christopher, why don't we start with Russell Westbrook? Does he get enough credit for how good he is?
No, not at all. And when I say that, I'm just going to keep it focused on this season. That I threw it out there as Russell Westbrook being an all-NBA player that, you know, because he missed the All-Star team when he did this year's historic, and people are like, yeah, I don't have him on my all-NBA ballot. I'm like, he is averaging a triple-double in a fourth season in 5 years, and the only reason he didn't do it for one season is because he, you know, gave up some of the reins to James Harden. Like, what? How is this guy not just automatically an all-NBA selection averaging a triple-double this year? I don't understand it. So to answer your question, he absolutely is not getting the respect he deserves for that alone.
So they're all but locked into one of these matchups here, right? Chicago lost last night. The Wizards have to lose all their games. Chicago has to win all of them. So if the Wizards win one more game, they're pretty much in here, Chris. Where will they finish and what will it mean?
Well, that's what's crazy because before Bradley Beal tweaked his hamstring, I was bullish on them getting to that eighth spot and then play it because, you know, the seventh and eighth seed, basically they play one game to see who's going to be the seventh, who's going to be the eighth seed, which is kind of weird. I thought they would get all the way up to possibly seventh and be in a great position here. But look, whether they're ninth or tenth, because that's where it looks like they're going to end up, though they could technically still catch the Hornets who have, what, a game on them. I just see them, you know, finishing in a ninth or tenth spot because of Bradley Beal's injury. And they're going to have to fight, I think, with Westbrook and Beal. They have proven that if Beal comes back healthy and is 100% and looks like the Beal that leads the league in scoring and drop 50 on you, then I like them against any of those teams, especially Indiana and Charlotte.
Right. This is probably a little bit irresponsible to look ahead to the offseason before whatever happens in the playoffs, but I kind of think that they've made their bet a little bit. They might be able to make some noise. They're going to be a tough out, but I'm more interested in this offseason because I do think they've got the starter kit here for something really cool with Westbrook and Beal. Maybe a little more flexibility than they've had in the past. Shepard has won a bunch of trades now. Does Scott Brooks come back? And what is the outlook for their offseason?
I still think Scott Brooks has to go. I think he's the biggest problem with this team right now. And I just don't know. I've heard conflicting reports on that, you know, the team's going to move on regardless. But seeing the success that they had, I just hope that doesn't mean that Scott Brooks comes back. I don't hate Scott Brooks personally or anything. I just don't think he does a good job. So I think if this team can move on, I mean, look at the Atlanta Hawks, what they did last offseason. Let's just look at them. They went and got Bogdan Bogdanovich. They went and got Danilo Gallinari. And when it wasn't working out with Lloyd Pierce, who's a great guy, they went and got Nate McMillan to be their head coach. And look at them now. I think the Wizards could be in a similar position with a good offseason with one or two acquisitions. We know, you know, you got Daniel Gafford who can play with this team. Thomas Bryant is coming back. So you know, have the front court getting solidified. We know what Westbrook and Beal are, and you got Bertans locked in. Just make a deal or two and make this team a little bit better. And I think that you'd be looking at a team that could finish in the top five, and the East should be projected to do so.
Chris, you're the best, buddy. Thanks as always.
All right, fellas.
Let's talk some Nationals, please, Darius. We got Craig Heist to do that very thing, to talk some Nationals with us. Heisty, this offense is gross. They don't hit. Outside of Turner and Soto, those guys hit. The other guys simply do not. Any fix in sight?
You sound like you're making a movie review or something. You know, maybe tonight when the offense gets, jumbled up a little bit in the lineup with, Andrew Stevenson leading off, and then they're going to have Trey Turner and Juan Soto along with Ryan Zimmerman at the top of the lineup. Jordy Mercer's going to play second base tonight, and Davey's thinking on this, and he'll be hitting ninth as well, but Davey's thinking on this is, all four, pretty good fastball hitters. Zach Wheeler throws a bunch of fastballs, so we'll see whether or not that creates some offense tonight, but, you know, they're second in the league, Danny, in average behind the Reds, but they've only scored 111 runs. Contrast that to the other team that they're below the Nats, and that's the Mets, 106. But the Mets have just reeled off seven in a row, and they're sitting atop the division.
Yeah, that's a better ball club right now.
Yeah.
No doubt about that. As far as the lineup goes, I guess I'm happy overall because last night they moved Josh Bell up to the three hole, and I think fans are overreacting and screaming about never playing him again. He's going to be much better a few weeks from now, Heisty. But you can't bat him third behind Soto and have Soto pitched around. That was egregious last night. So I'm glad we're not doing that. But they have to win tonight. I am a little bit surprised you're going with some bench guys like Stevenson and Mercer. They're taking on water. Like, this, to me, is a massive game to try to win this and have a chance to win this series tomorrow.
No question. And when you think about them being 4.5 out coming into this, now 5, with the Mets winning and beating the Orioles today, this is a huge game tonight. And, you know, Bell's hitting 134. Kyle Schwarber's hitting 198. So these are the two guys that they brought in here to be able to be run producers. And so far, first 6 weeks of the season, it hasn't happened.
Hasn't happened for Victor Robles yet either, right? He got an hour in the leadoff spot and, you know, yanked back down to the bottom of the order, which I think where he belongs at this point. Looks like he doesn't know who he's supposed to be as a hitter. Like, he's caught in between trying to take a huge swing, and then it's this sort of aiming, mechanical, kind of awkward swing to try to make contact, and he's doing neither. I guess he's walking a little bit more. That's nice, but, you know, it combines nicely with the strikeouts and lack of power. I don't know, man. It's tough to watch him take some ABs.
It is, but I will say from me watching him over the last week, I think the at-bats are a little bit better. He is taking more walks, and I think Davey wants his approach to just be up the middle of the field, and, you know, that's the way he's going to get hits, you know, an occasional bunt. He's got the speed to be able to do that, but, yeah, he's another guy that's got to get going.
I'd love to see him hit a little more. I have a lot less issue with him. He plays brilliant defensively. If he's not running into outs on base, generally I'm okay with whatever Robles has given me offensively. Lester on the hill against, you mentioned, a fastball thrower for the Phillies this evening. So give me the pitching matchup and break it down for us.
Well, Lester right now 0-1 with a 2.70 ERA coming in. However, over his last 11 starts against the Phils, he's 8-1 with a 1.92 ERA. The only loss came back in 2019 in May, again, while he was a member of the Cubs. Now, Wheeler, he threw a shutout the last time out, last Thursday, against the Brewers, and he's pitched into the ninth inning two of his last three starts. So, again, this is no day at the beach tonight for the Nationals. They're going to have to, you know, have good at-bats and see if they can get something going, especially at the top of the lineup.
Heisty, thank you, buddy. I'll see you in about 12 seconds during the commercial break.
Bye.
In a different studio, but we know you're very nearby, and that makes us feel better. Grant and Danny on the Fan, Michael Phillips at 4:40. I do want to preview the Wizards game for a couple of moments. We can do that next segment. Also, there looks to be a leaked schedule that is, from what I'm able to gather, the right schedule for the Washington football team. So we can actually go through and address their schedule once and for all here ahead of the 8 o'clock formal release tonight. We'll do that next.
Six seconds left as it is brought in along the near side. Michael Roffel, a shot, he scores! Michael Roffel from nearly an impossible angle with 1.8 seconds to go. It's 2-1 Washington, the first goal in a Capitals uniform for Michael Roffel.
The last time I can remember the Caps winning on a walk-off like that in the final second was my bachelor party in, I don't even remember what year that would have been, February of 18 maybe? I think it was the year they went on to win the Cup, so that's right. Jay Beagle in Raleigh.
Oh, yes.
Against the Hurricanes, who was my favorite Capital at my bachelor party. We're in Raleigh, North Carolina, and a bunch of us are wearing our cap sweaters, sitting second level of the concourse behind the goal. Beagle with like a second left scores the game winner, and we took to the streets. It was a good time.
Had a good little time.
We were already feeling ourselves pretty good at that game. We were pretty insufferable, I think, largely, for the fans around us. But, yeah, it started to ramp up the party just a little bit.
I would say so, yeah.
When they won in that fashion. Was actually at home last night with two children, so things have changed considerably for me in the last 3 years since.
Really? You think there's any adjustments there?
Just slightly.
Hammered in Raleigh versus shh, go to sleep. It's okay. Shh,
everybody,
shh.
It's going to be fine. You know, already laying in bed watching the end of the game now.
Yeah.
A little bit different. But I love whatever that was.
Whatever you want to call it.
I still don't know how that puck went in.
You won't be able to explain it to me.
Will you at least explain it for people that didn't see, like, the actual goal?
So I missed the actual goal live. I have to see it on the replay because I hear Joe B. Puck comes in on the opposite side with a handful of seconds left, and I go, not a threat, and I turn my head. I now have calibrated overtime.
Because the game's over.
The game is over. They will go to overtime. They'll play 3-on-3. Neither team really cares. We all get a point. Maybe you win in the overtime. Maybe you don't, right? Who's going to be on the ice for overtime? I've kind of calibrated to something else. I sort of look up. Everyone's confused on the ice. Raffel is below the goal line. I need this part stressed. Sometimes I remember Kuznetsov had a shot at one point that this is a tough angle. And it is a short angle on the short side. I had a little limited view to get it in. Raffel is below the goal line. This is not a tough angle. This is not an angle. This is a negative angle. This doesn't exist.
It doesn't work.
He snaps a shot or snaps something towards the net off the back of the Boston goaltender's dome, hits the guy in the back of the head, and he does like a what the hell kind of a face as it goes into the top. As I look at the goal, the top right corner of the net bounces right back out.
So it's the equivalent of a basketball game ending with a half court shot or something maybe even crazy.
Like bouncing off someone's head into the basket.
Exactly. But I think the reason I'm so enamored or fascinated or intrigued by this whole goal is it was in a game that mattered so little that it was just kind of like, oh my gosh, that just happened. If this was a month ago, it would be the talk of the town today. If this was game one of the playoffs on Saturday night, it would go down as one of the greatest goals in Capitals history. It was in a game where the Providence Bruins just were playing like minor league hockey, and the Capitals cared just a tad bit more. So it's like, okay, whatever. But yeah, basically the puck from center ice, quite literally, is just kind of sent around the boards, top of the screen off to the right, and it rims around to the left side, and Raffel, who skates in all alone at the left dot, kind of corrals the puck as he's approaching the end line, the red line. Both of his skates are behind the cages, so to speak, as he shoots off of the mask and into the net.
And he's left-handed. This is not like you're reaching back with your right hand on the other side of the line. It's impossible.
1.8 seconds left when the goal was scored, and the place went nuts. So it was a fun night for the Capitals. John Carlson was on the show today. If you missed that interview, podcast it. He says he will be playing for the Caps in game one against the Bruins on Saturday, and he made it sound like TJ Oshie should be on the ice as well. We'll get to the Wizards in a minute. I want to go through this leaked Washington football team schedule because everything I can gather reaching out to the people that I've talked to, they're not denying anything on this schedule. So I'm now operating as if this is the actual schedule. This guy that has it, his name is Ryan Fowler. And I think he worked in the digital department with the football team at one point recently. So presumably just has someone still with the digital team that sent him this. I don't know. But here's what we're looking at. So the specifics, I don't know if it's too boring to go through all the games 1 through 17. But the bottom line is this. They open with the Chargers and Justin Herbert in week one at home. And they play back-to-back home games where they play the Giants on Thursday Night Football in week two. They then get a week and a half to prepare for their first road game at Buffalo against Josh Allen and the Bills. Their second road game is in Atlanta against the Falcons. They're going to have to deal with Kyle Pitts, which I'm steamed up about. Not because that's an easy thing to do. It's going to be brutal.
I just want to watch Kyle Pitts.
But that means in September, in the first month of the year, we get to watch a full Kyle Pitts game. Yeah.
Jamin Davis, good luck, man. Explore the space. Enjoy it.
He had to do it at Kentucky.
Yeah.
You know, that was one of the reasons he got drafted is he ran around with Pitts and showed well on film. So he'll get to do that. Week five, New Orleans Saints at home. Jameis Winston will be your starting quarterback of a Saints team. We're going to find out right away, I think, because they play Green Bay if Rodgers is still there in week one. Mm-hmm. If they are a contender in the NFC. By then, we'll have a pretty good feel. Are the Saints taking a step back post-Breeze, or does Sean Payton still have a team that's one of the powerhouses in the conference?
Is that roster starting to get old? There's some young pieces there. Obviously, Kamara and Michael Thomas and company, but you know, maybe with Breeze's transition moving on, it may end up being now they take a step back.
Week six, Patrick Mahomes comes to town. So if you want to see the Chiefs at FedEx Field, get ready to shell out a couple bucks for a ticket in the early fall. What I love about that is the time of the year. Like, it's not gross. It's not going to be snowing or cold rain. Should be pretty. Might be chilly. It's going to be autumn. But a little bit before Halloween, a couple weeks before Halloween, so mid-October, they'll be hosting the Chiefs and Patrick Mahomes. Sounds like they're at Lambeau Field in October, and then they're in Denver on Halloween at the end of the month, right before the calendar turns to November. So you're getting potential snow game that would have been gross in the winter at Lambeau out of the way, first half of the year. And you are getting the game at Denver out of the way, first half of the year. That takes away two potential awful weather games, which is always one of the things I look at. By the way, Buffalo, same thing.
Yeah.
Buffalo, who you're playing, you're in Buffalo in September. That's one of the coldest, most like awful environments if you're a team going on the road. So three potential snow games you don't have to worry about now. I love that for them.
Yeah, I hadn't even thought of it, that part of it. So your snow games may end up being your bad weather games, late season in the Northeast, Philadelphia, New York, at that stage. But you're going out to Vegas, looks like either the start of December, according to what we've seen there. That looks like, I think, maybe the first weekend
of
December.
Let's keep going through it before we skip
ahead. Oh, yeah, okay, sure,
that.
Sorry.
So we're through eight games. Mm-hmm. Bye week is week nine. So first of all, let's just discuss that for a second. Eight games, bye week, nine games. You can't ask for a better time to break up the slate than almost smack dab in the middle.
Indeed.
They have the mini bye week in week two, Thursday Night Football, and then they have another break with the bye week in week nine. I will say that's a long time without any kind of a break after that. From week 11 through week 18, they've got a Monday night and a Sunday night game the rest of the way. So there's one short week game. There's one week where you get an extra break of a day before you play Seattle. But where would you have wanted if you could handpick to drop in the bye week? I feel like that's okay midway through the season.
Yeah, as close to that as possible. I pretty much any time after week eight, I go, that's fine. You didn't get screwed. I remember there was a week four bye week at one point.
Yeah, that was a few years ago.
You know, never that.
Those are brutal.
Yeah.
Okay, second half. Here's your final stretch run of nine games. They host the Tampa Bay Bucks to kick off. And again, this is all based on this leaked schedule from Ryan Fowler of the Draft Network. Based on what I can gather, I've been asking around. Nobody's telling me he's wrong. So most of this is checked out already, and he's got more details than anybody else. We're assuming that he's right on this. They're hosting the Bucs, then at Carolina. Their only Monday Night Football game of the year will be at FedEx Field in November against the Seattle Seahawks, right around the Thanksgiving time frame. So that it might even be the Monday after Thanksgiving, I'm guessing. December 5th, first December game is in Vegas, you were just referencing. You like how that fell? Because even though that place is a hockey puck, it's indoors. You don't have to worry about the heat playing out in Vegas. Still, if we're going or anybody's going, and I can tell you with the show or not, I'll be there. It's a lot more pleasant to be in Vegas in December than it's going to be in early September.
Yeah, we can confirm. Summer in Vegas was hot, FYI.
So gross and hot. Dallas comes to FedEx Field December 12th-ish, 2 weeks after that. On December 26th, the day after Christmas, you're in Dallas for Sunday Night Football. Here's the kicker on this whole schedule. Last five games, all division games. Starting with December 12th, hosting Dallas, the 19th at Philly, the 26th at Dallas, and then Philly and the New York Giants back-to-back into January. All five of your six division games stacked in succession to end the schedule. That's pretty crazy.
It is nuts. A couple notes here. I believe with the new rules, some of these games could be flexed. We know to Sunday Night Football, but also to Monday Night Football now, right? So right now they've only got one Monday Night Football game against Seattle. That could increase if there's a war for the NFC East and it's not more compelling than something else. Or again, Sunday Night Football, kind of a similar choice there. But closing with the five division games is massive because here's the way I could kind of see it going. You build a bit of a deficit as you go throughout the rough part of your schedule. There's five
of deficit like they're behind.
Yeah, there's five of seven games starting in week three against teams that had like winning records, but not like 9-7 winning records, like 13-3 winning records, contender winning records. So if that plays out the way that, you know, maybe you might think on paper, again, this is all way too soon to pronounce the hit, but you could make your sort of eventual comeback there after Tampa, Carolina, then you start to look at those division games. It may not matter if they have leads on you. You start handling your own business. You end up, let's say, 4-2, 5-1 in the division. That, you know, you put a little bit of hay in the barn, you end up winning the thing.
It definitely gives you the chance for the prototypical Washington football team end of season playoff run. 05, 5 in a row. 07, 4 in a row. 12, 7 in a row. 15, 4 in a row. Like, we have seen that so many times. And it kind of gives off that vibe. Did you see, by the way, someone sent me this, the Chargers, who are the week one matchup, first time in a while, fourth time ever, that the rookie of the year on offense and the rookie of the year on defense will meet the following season to kick off their sophomore years with Justin Herbert and Chase Young. The Chargers tweeted out, breaking, our week one opponent is a football team. And they like released an email saying that you're playing the Washington football team, trolling the team name. I thought that was kind of going to be done last year, but I guess that's still a thing where teams troll Washington for being the Washington football team.
Rightly so. Pick a name immediately and stick with it. Just deal with the bad and we'll get used to it and try to win some games. Like, yeah, you're still a football team. You open yourself up to this. This is what's available to people now to do this to you when you're still this awkward construction.
We'll ask Michael Phillips about the schedule. And more important, as far as I'm concerned, I don't know if you agree with me on this, the Charles Leno signing. The schedule is what it is. You're going to play those teams one way or the other. Mm-hmm. And I really believe when you play teams is more important than who you play. And I don't mean based on, you're playing them in week 11. I mean, are they healthy? Is their quarterback on the field? Like, we don't know. People that are going to go through tomorrow, the wins and the losses are insane.
It's irresponsible.
Do that, and it doesn't make any sense. And they're just killing time on the radio. It's a bad segment. Having said that, if someone on our station does it, you should listen. Because they're going to do it different, and it's going to be much better, I'm sure. But I don't know, man. I look at this schedule, and I think to myself, I'll make some predictions the days before those games when I know who's healthy and who isn't. But the most important thing that happened for this team today was that they signed a pretty good left tackle in Charles Leno, who was on our show and was awesome at 3 o'clock.
We agree. A couple other notes that I think are worth mentioning is when a Thursday night football game is, when a short rest, when's your bye week, one of the divisional games. We covered that stuff. I think that's the appropriate thing to cover.
The line, I've been telling you, the Wizards are bigger dogs tonight than I would have anticipated. +6.5 on the FanDuel Sportsbook. Getting +220 on them. I'm taking them on the money line. And I'm going to lay together a couple other things like Russell Westbrook getting 15 assists, Russell Westbrook getting 15 rebounds. Because you know he's going to have to be virtuoso.
If there's a Russell Westbrook number, I would take the over.
Right. You got to at this point. Michael Phillips, Richmond Times-Dispatch, joins us next, 5 at 5 at the top of the hour on Grant and Danny. The Fan, thanks for listening to the show. We're barreling toward the 5 at 5 today, going to cover the Nats new look lineup tonight. Washington's got a new left tackle. We talked to Charles Leno earlier in the show. Even though I've known Leno for a long time and watched him with the Bears, I still have to stop myself before I say it so that I don't say Jay Leno every single time. It's just one of those last names where someone is just more famous and more front of mind.
Well, you know me. That's not my strong suit. I have a hole in my game when it comes to this. The real challenge for me is when there's a letter of the first name of both people that's the same. I always conflate the two, like every time. So if there was like a Chad Leno, I would call him Chad Leno a million times.
25 out of 10, though, of an interview.
He was great.
He couldn't have been better. So make sure you grab that podcast when we're done. Speaking of great interviews, Michael Phillips, Richmond Times-Dispatch, always delivers, and he joins us right now on Grant and Danny. Michael, first, let's start here. Bigger deal today, the signing of Leno to play left tackle or the schedule release that everyone's going nuts about?
Man, I love a good schedule release. So I don't know. You got to put me on the spot there. I think I got to go schedule release. Look, this is a good signing. Depth at the left tackle position is great. He can play right tackle if you need him to. They ran out of right tackles late in the year, so it's a great addition to bolster the depth. Schedules are fun, though. Like, schedules are fun to look at, to talk about, to go line by line on. I like schedules.
Well, let's, for a moment, humor us, and let's talk about Charles Leno before we get to all the different schedule things.
It's a minority opinion.
It's not. Actually, I think it's the majority opinion. Everyone's doing predicting wins and losses, even though it's not even officially out yet. What does this mean for offensive line? How is this going to shake out not only this year but beyond? Are they grooming people to maybe take Sheriff's place? Like, how do you see this going this year depth-wise and then maybe beyond? Are they setting some stuff up?
Yeah, and I think if you're looking at guys moving, you're also looking at Sadiq Charles potentially moving to guard long-term. He's a little bit smaller. He's fast. I think he could excel in that position. Now, you're still hoping he shows up, he dominates, he's your left tackle of the future, because those guys are insanely valuable if you can find them. But based on the way they've moved this offseason, using a second-round pick, signing Leno, Lucas is still in the building. I think that's a pretty strong statement that whatever they saw from Sadiq Charles last year wasn't enough to throw any amount of confidence behind him long term. So I don't know that you can really have a lot of optimism in that. But, you know, maybe he reinvents himself. Maybe he pulls in Eric Flowers and he's very good at guard. He's got Derek Flowers right there to teach him how to do it, if that's what it comes down to. Cosme, it's a great plan to not throw him in right away. Like, it's just really hard to play tackle in the NFL. Morgan Moses stunk his first year. I don't know if you guys remember that back when. Yeah, he was a bum. But it turns out it's just really hard to do at the NFL level. Obviously, he's done just fine for himself since then. So giving Cosme a little extra time to not have to jump in right away, I think, is a very good thing.
All right, Michael, to your beloved schedule release then, what did you take out of what you've seen so far?
Well, I love the early Thursday game and the early Thursday game at home, because that's what they go to Dallas every other year on Thanksgiving, and everybody moans about it every year, but rightfully so. It's a short week and you have to travel, and the other team didn't have to travel, and it's a big game. Instead, you get week two, everybody's going to be relatively fresh. You get it at home coming off of a home game. I think that's about as good as you can do. I think starting with Chargers Giants is about as good as you can do with that slate. It's a brutal slate overall. So to start with two games that at least on paper are pretty winnable gives you at least the chance to get out ahead of things early, which is nice. And then you always love to close with divisional games, man. The way the NFC East has gone recently, this thing could come down to the final weeks. Those could be meaningful games. I think one other thing I would mention that stands out to me on the Thursday night game, they're not in the Fox time slot. They're in the NFL Network cable time slot. You remember that Giants-Washington game 4 years ago? That was on Thanksgiving night. They gave that to America as a primo game. Now they can't even put it on network television.
Michael Phillips, Richmond Times-Dispatch with us here on Grant and Danny. And you mentioned the five divisional games at the end of the season. I feel like we've done like two or three games in December and in years past. Hey, these are going to be massive. Like, let's circle these. Five straight with a couple alternating opponents, Dallas-Philly. That's just really weird. How is that going to affect things?
I like it. I think that, you know, if you give these storylines a chance to develop, these teams play each other week in, week out, you'll be watching the other games. I think it'd be very good. I liked it in hockey this year. I didn't know if I would, but I really like watching the teams play on Friday and then watch them play again on Sunday. It caps pins is on every 4 minutes on NBC Sports Washington. It's just, you know, you, I don't know. I thought I would dislike it at first, but I've really come to enjoy it. You get to know the other teams, the styles, the matchups. I think we're going to see a little bit of that.
Michael Phillips, check out his work in the Richmond Times-Dispatch. All right, let's just real quick look at this kind of murderer's row middle of the season where they're dealing with New Orleans, Kansas City, Green Bay in succession, and then on the back end of the bye, Tampa Bay, Seattle, and Vegas all kind of barreled together. Like, when you look at the schedule, how do you break it down? We had the four quarters with 16 games. You can't do that anymore. It's all weird now.
We go to overtime. Yeah, we have four quarters and an overtime, I guess. The coaches are going to have to reinvent the way they talk about this for sure. I would remind you, though, last year at this time, we were discussing the murderer's row that was on the schedule of Pittsburgh, Seattle, San Francisco, and I'm missing one. There was one in that stretch of four. It was a full-on murderer's row at the time in the offseason, and then they beat San Francisco. The rest of them turned out to just not be as big of a deal, and they ended up beating Pittsburgh too, even though that was a big game in the Dallas on Thanksgiving. So these things change. These things are fluid. That said, I think you can take to the bank that Kansas City is going to be a good football team. Tampa is going to be a good football team. I'm going to love seeing those guys at FedEx. I think from a ticket sales standpoint, it's a good schedule. Everybody wants to come see Patrick Mahomes, wants to see Tom Brady. But you better make some hay early, and you better hope this division is a little bit like last year where you don't need 12 wins to take care of business.
Michael, thank you, buddy. Always appreciate the insight, man. Have a great rest of your week.
Absolutely. You guys too.
Be well. The great Michael Phillips of the Richmond Times-Dispatch. Our 5 at 5 on Grant and Danny is next. We'll cover the Wizards game tonight. The Nats shaking up their lineup. What John Carlson told us about his availability and TJ Oshie's availability, and the Washington football team match up with the Chargers in week 1, among other items. 5 big stories on G&D.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and 3-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.